you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
Conceive, believe, achieve. Shut the f*** up.
This is Believe You Me on the Gas Digital Network.
Welcome to the show. We're a little late on this one. It is a Tuesday morning, not a Monday. But believe it or not, we're in the same house, but we couldn't do it in front of us. Technical things, you know, there was feedback and whatnot. So Lewis is in my spare bedroom. I would say, Lewis, how you doing? But I know how you're doing. You're probably the same as me because, you know, we don't see each other very often. We may have drank a bottle of bourbon. I may have a hangover. But how are you feeling?
I don't know what it is. We just keep drinking for no reason. Nobody else is up. Everyone's going to bed. And we're just pounding back whiskey for no reason until both of us just can't speak anymore.
Talking we go to sleep. Utter nonsense. There was at no point did we come close to forming a coherent sentence. There was nothing intelligent. It wasn't essential. We didn't need to have those conversations. But my God, we had them and we were passionate about them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, that's right. I am out here in California. I'm in the half mansion in the spare bedroom. I call it a half bedroom. I'm in the half bedroom in the half mansion, having a great time. James and Lucas are out there playing right now. This is part of my annual Father's Day trip. And I have to say thank you. Your family, very gracious. We went out to dinner last night with the entire Bisping clan. I paid, not a big deal.
You did pay. You did pay. I was kind of taken by surprise, and I thought he's going to regret this. It's not the cheapest restaurant. It's not like, you know, like a fancy steakhouse, but it's certainly not a cheap place. And obviously, there's us, and there's Megan, and there's you. So it's like eight people, and he's like, Mike, I got this. I'm like, no, it's fine. And you're like, because I'm used to it. It stings. Yeah. I pay for six people every time. And unless you're accustomed to that, it hurts. I'm like, okay, big shop, you get the check.
I know, but I'm cheating because you paid for the cabin in Big Bear, which was substantially more expensive. So I just get to look cool in front of the whole family. The whole family's like, wow, Gomez, fucking.
Yeah.
And I've made out like a fucking bandit.
And in your mind, you think we're equal. So I got the dinner. You're paying for the accommodation, the gasoline in the car. Not that you'll get dinner in Big Bear because it's my turn. But all the while in secret, I've shelled out thousands of dollars for this amazing trip for your son. Yep. And you get the credit.
$350 later, I'm like, look at that, everyone.
No, we are going up to Big Bear shortly, unfortunately. As we said, we had a bit of bourbon last night and we're wrestling. Well, Callum starts wrestling. He's a wrestler, right? But he's recovering from a bucket handle meniscus tear surgery. He had that a few months ago, but he's still giving him problems. But he felt good enough to grab my leg as he does on occasion. And we started having a bit of wrestling. And what happens? He hits his knee on the floor. He can't bend his good knee. Now he can't bend his good leg. And as soon as we finish this podcast, I've got to run him down to the hospital to get a goddamn x-ray. I don't believe it. How dare he? The selfish son of a bitch.
I mean, if you guys got to understand, in the Bisping household, at any given moment, somebody's going to go for a single leg. Like just any, like you're going to be standing there and at one point you're going to be on your back. So you have to always be aware. I'm assuming that's probably in most fighters' households. That's just the way it is. But Bisping is also like, if you look around the half mansion, he's like a minimalist, like in terms of the way they decorate. It's not like over cluttered. It's very like, it's a classy space. It's a lot of hard edges, like a lot of marble everywhere. I just feel like at any given moment, you know, you're going to crack your head open on something.
What is the opposite of that? A house with made of foam? Do you know what I mean? What is this?
Well,
do you know what I mean?
It's not like this isn't like a cozy
sponge and foam everywhere.
I wouldn't call this like a cozy, like, you know, like there's not soft rugs. There's not like even your fucking couch is like tight leather. Like, it's like everything
sucks. I fucking hate that couch.
Nice. It's
no,
nice.
No. Okay, it's fine. Louis, hold on. Let's go through the list. The house isn't warm. It's not comfortable. It's not cozy. It's hard. Everything's marble. It's like if this was a planet, it would be a Mars. It would be desolate. It wouldn't be Earth. Nice and warm and cozy. We're Pluto. We're not even a planet. We're a fucking, what are they called, Pluto now? A tiny planet? I forget what they call it. A micro planet? Fuck you, Lewis. Get out of my house. If it's so bad, just get out.
It's beautiful, but it's a very hard house. There's nothing soft in this
you
place.
You bet your fucking ass. That's right. If houses were like Bisping, it'd be like this one.
It's a hard house.
It's a hard house.
It's a hard house. It really is. You get what I'm saying, though? You go to like your grandma's house, it's like soft plush furniture everywhere, and there's pillows all over the couches.
These floors cost $20,000. You bet your ass they're hard. They're real 100% hard wood. I don't want no soft wood, okay? If you're going to wrestle in this house, you're going to break a leg. Simple as that. And Callum knows that, and he signed up for it.
Yeah. Honestly, this isn't his first rodeo. He should have known.
Yeah, so anyway, so then I'm going to rush him down to the hospital. Then we're going up to Big Bear. Should be fun. We're going to rent a boat. We're going to do some fishing. We're going to go on the jet skis. We're going to take the ski chair up to the top of the mountain, all that type of stuff. Should be fun. We are planning on getting another podcast in while we're up there. That remains to be seen if we do or don't. Massive fights at the weekend. So we will make this a shorter one, unfortunately, because I do have to go to the hospital. But what's on your mind, Lewis? What do you want to talk about, bud?
I don't know, man. I'm excited. I'm excited to get up to Big Bear. I'm excited to do a little bit of father-son bonding. We had James and Lucas grapple on concrete last night for no reason. This is why we're just bad fathers. It's not even the hard house. The house wasn't hard enough. We said, Lucas and James, if you're going to grapple, we're going to go do it on the actual AstroTurf, or not the AstroTurf, the driveway.
Yeah, exactly. No, the house wasn't hard enough. We had a little firework display. I was annoying on Instagram. I, you know, filmed a little bit of it, but and that was fun. That was nice. Lewis showed up with a big, massive box of fireworks. Lucas's eyes lit up. It was great. And then when the fireworks ended, then they started grappling, and it was on the grass. But then there was hard concrete next to it, and I'm like, we're terrible fathers. They're definitely gonna hurt their heads or something. Of course they didn't, they made it out fine, but that's okay because Callum made up for it. Callum came into the house and he may have severely injured his knee.
I have a question for you, Mr. Bisping, because we are about to head up to Big Bear, California, and did Big Bear, California get its name because of big bears?
No, it got it because of small ducks. Of course. What do you think? Why do you think? You know, if you look at the flag of California, it's a gigantic grizzly bear. I was listening to the Joe Rogan podcast recently, and he said they killed all the grizzly bears in California because they're so violent. You know what I mean? But up in Big Bear, they still got the brown bears or the black bears, whatever. They got bears. Okay, and they're big. That's why they call it Big Bear. And they're vicious, and they're wild, and they can smell from miles away. They can run 35 miles an hour. They can see in the dark. They can climb trees like it's nothing. We, to them, are nothing. They will eat us for breakfast. And yes, they roam freely, Lewis. Where you're taking your young child?
How can you guys, Brian or Harrington, look up bear attacks in Big Bear, California? Because I'm literally terrified. I've never seen The Revenant, which apparently, like, there's a gruesome scene where he's eaten by a bear, like, just for like 10 minutes.
It's awesome. You've never seen it?
No, I never saw it.
Number one, The Revenant is an awesome movie. That's the one that DiCaprio got the Oscar for eventually, but he should have had one before that. Leonardo DiCaprio, one of the finest actors of our generation, in my opinion. And I think that's everybody's opinion as well. But The Revenant, number one, you got to check it out. But that scene is done so well. And he just, he does. He gets ripped to pieces. It's very violent.
This is from Harrington. He's really disrespecting you. This is from TripAdvisor. Harrington writes, are there any bears in Big Bear? And they wrote, no bears unless you visit the Moon Ridge Zoo. So Bisping, I'm getting conflicting information. Harrington, who is simply a lowly producer on this podcast, he's just completely...
Are you undermining what I'm saying, Harrington? You're full of shit, right? Whoever wrote that on TripAdvisor is a moron, okay? Oh, there's no bears unless you go to the zoo. Yes, if you go to the zoo, you can probably see a bear at any time, Harrington. But there is bears in the wild. There's bears in the wild pretty close to my house. You know what I mean? We got bobcats. We got cougars. We got all kinds of wildlife stuff. And there is bears. And there's certainly bears in the San Bernardino National Park. Big bear. There's fucking bears. You're full of shit, Harrington. What do you say? Please explain yourself. Come to the camera. I want to see you.
I'm doing exactly what Lewis told me to do, and I looked it up. According to this guy somebody posted on TripAdvisor, hey, this is going to sound dumb, but I'm driving from Vegas to LA. We were thinking about stopping off in Big Bear. Are there any bears there? And this guy posts an article from bigbearcountry.com that says, no, you're not going to run into any bears there unless you want to go to the zoo.
Okay, listen, I'm looking at this. Black bear attacks are rare in California and typically are defensive in nature because the bear is surprised or it's defending its cubs. However, bears accustomed to people may become too bold and act aggressively. That's the first. I just Googled bear attacks California. That's the first thing that came up. Now, if what you're saying is true, that wouldn't even be a sentence. That wouldn't be on the internet. So there you go. You're wrong. Stop trying to make me look foolish.
I did find one about a kid getting mauled at a summer camp in 1993. So
good. Thank God.
Nice. Good. Now we're talking. That's the type of content that we want. Oh, dear. All right. Well, listen, we won't see any bears. I've never seen a bear up there, Lewis. You are safe. You are fine. However, I feel like right now your main issue is the camera that's constantly
driving me
rotating.
Wild. I can't explain to you. It probably wouldn't bother anybody but me, but it's slowly turning. And
it's bothering the hell out of me because I know that's where your primary area of focus is. And listen to this, ladies and gentlemen. Lewis comes to the house and the thing that he's using right now that has the camera on, he comes in, he pulls it out. You would think this guy invented this gizmo. Okay, he's like, Mike, look at this. And I'm like, instantly I can see it. I understand it. It doesn't need an explanation. It's very self-explanatory to the naked eye. Like, one look, you know what it does. He gets it out. He's attaching it to the table. He's attaching it to like the kitchen surfaces. He's like, look at this. It attaches to anything. And you can put it in whatever position you want. He wouldn't shut up about the thing. And now look at it. Look at it. Where's your fucking fancy device Lewis?
Can I say? I took, a friend of mine I was hanging out with in LA, and I accidentally took hers instead of mine, and this one is broken. The fucking thing, it's broken, and it's driving me wild.
Yeah, yeah. Well, now the podcast is broken.
It is broken. Is this crazy distracting, the fact that we're not framed same?
No, it's not bothering me in the slightest, but like, we're supposed to be doing it in person. We're in the same house and you're in the fucking spare room. It's like, how retarded is this? We seriously, these numbers got to grow. We got to step up a gear. We got to go to the next level. We're doing it. I'm spending some money. We're going to get a studio within the house. I mean, I have this, but I'm telling you, we're going to the next level. In fact, that's it. I'm renting out a studio. We're going big time.
This is it, guys. All right.
Next time you're here, we're going to do it in person. Not in the same house, in person, both on multiple cameras, multiple microphones. It's going to be mind-blowing. All right, guys, let's just take a quick second to hear from Sheath Underwear. You know the deal by now. If you listen to this podcast, they've been a longtime supporter of our show. Basically, some of the most comfortable underwear that you're ever going to wear. They have the little pouch inside. Obviously stops your little guy from swinging around. It's very comfortable.
It's a little pouch. I would say it's a medium to average size pouch.
It's a gigantic pouch for mine. You know what I mean? They're fully customizable. Sheath Underwear, they're great. They sponsor a bunch of UFC fighters. Donald Cerrone, Bryce Mitchell, to name but a few. But of course, you don't care about that. You want a good product. And let me tell you, if you're looking for good underwear, you're looking for, what are some of the details? Moisture wicking. I don't know what that means. Here's the deal. They're very comfortable. They're stylish designs. They've got a design for everybody. They were started by a guy. He was serving in Afghanistan, of course. It's a very hot climate, so therefore the balls would get a little bit too hot. So we designed these underwear with that in mind. They're cool. They're comfortable. They're stylish. And they help us out, Lewis.
Yeah, I really love them. All bullshit aside, they're just the nicest underwear I've ever owned in my entire life. They're really, really breathable. They just feel very cool. That's the best way to describe it. Like, the material feels very cold to touch, which is just awesome for, like, undergarments. It feels very high-end. And in all honesty, like, not for nothing, they support this show. So you should be supporting brands that support shows like this.
Yes.
I'll tell you right now, those guys are fucking legitimate fans of great comedy and great podcasts. So if not for nothing else, you're going to buy some cool-looking underwear, get these underwear just for that reason.
Yeah, and 100% money back guarantee. That's how, you know, that's how confident they are that you're going to love them. And trust me, you are going to love them. I've had some people hitting me up on Instagram, sending me messages saying, hey, listen, I just took the plunge. I tried out the Sheath underwear, by far the most comfortable underwear that I've ever owned. So give it a try. That's how you'll feel. And if you don't feel like that, they're like, okay, so what? No big deal. 100% money back guarantee. And they ship anywhere in the world. So take a look for yourself. Go to the website, see the styles they have. They also do women's items as well. So go to sheathunderwear.com, use the code BELIEVE20. Yes, that's BELIEVE20. That means you'll get 20% off your order. They ship anywhere in the world. Sheathunderwear.com. Check them out. You won't be disappointed. Money back guarantee if you are. Sheathunderwear.com, BELIEVE20, 20% off. All right, where were we?
Okay, we're going to Big Bear. Let's talk about the fights because we only have an hour here.
We do. Fights at the weekend. Oh, my word. Let's just start with that. Absolutely incredible. I mean, the fights at the apex. I mean, number one, the UFC have done 5 events now in a row. 5 weeks, 5 events at the apex. And, you know, I mean, listen, you call me a company man, whatever you want. But I think, you know, that's incredible what they achieved there. Of course, next week, they're flying out to Fight Island. They're going to do 4 events, I think, in 2 weeks. Again, that's insane. You know, to organize this, the logistics of it, the protocol that they have to go through, the red tape and all that type of stuff with the commissions and stuff, it's quite the feat. And then on top of that, these fights, the last 5 weeks have been sensational. And Saturday night, my God, from start to finish, just incredible fights. I'll ask you this, Lewis, and I want the truth. Did you watch the fights?
Of course. I've never lied once in my life, Mr. Bisping.
And there's an outright lie straight away. That in itself is a lie, and I know that for a fact.
I did watch the fights. I was driving from Phoenix to Los Angeles, so I just ended up catching the last 4 fights, maybe. Okay.
Well, that's good.
The first one that I really remembered was, who was it? It was the really tall black guy versus John Volante.
Maurice Green.
Yeah, Maurice Green, which was a really fun fight. It wasn't like, I guess it wasn't the most like technical, but a really fun fight. And then honestly, the post-fight speech was so emotional that it just sort of like, I don't know, it was bizarre just in general. I never seen a submission like that. And obviously you could break it down technically because I guess it was like an arm triangle from I don't even know what it was. But the post-fight speech is, if you haven't seen that post-fight speech, I mean, he's literally just fucking hysterically crying. And it was really just touching to kind of see, especially as a dad, you're watching it. You're like, God damn it, dude.
I wasn't going to say this, but you brought it up. Oh, no. So I'm going to say it. Oh, no. I think there's a possibility that he was drunk.
What?
There's a possibility that he was a little bit tipsy, a little tipsy woo, right? Because the word on the street from Tanner Bowser had a fight against, who did he fight? Philip Lins, beautiful knockout. And then he got on the microphone and he said he saw him a few days ago at the pool and they were drinking beers and they had a little bit of a thing. And, you know, they talked about having a fight. And of course, they called each other out afterwards. But then someone told me afterwards, yeah, he was at the pool last night, the night before the fight. Sipping beers till silly o'clock in the hour. And good for him, whatever, because he went out there and he had a great fight. John Volante moves up to heavyweight. His first fight in the UFC as a heavyweight. He had a few prior to the UFC.
Okay, I was going to say he did fight like, was it Strikeforce or one of these other organizations as a heavyweight? I remember him.
Yeah, but I mean, he really embraced that whole heavyweight thing. He came in at 255 and he had a big old belly on him. First of all, John Volante, just one of the nicest guys. I mean, he's got a reputation for being really affable. He's funny. He's friendly. Him and Chris Weidman, you know, they have a good time. But he was great. We spoke to him in the fighter interviews and just such a really just nice, likable person. And you can't help but root for somebody like that, you know. man. You're not supposed to, as a commentator, you've got to be completely impartial, which I am. But still, you know, he's a nice guy. But then his opponent comes in and he's super nice. And you know what I mean? It's a weird energy because you speak to these people and you get to know them and you get to understand why they're doing this. And they got families. And it's all the same for a lot of fighters. They're just trying to give the family the best life. And you can't help but root for that. But then they're both like that. And of course, you've got to be professional. And you can't have, you know, any kind of skin in the game, shall we say. But Valente is a nice guy, but he was very heavy. And I was talking about this, and I wasn't trying to be disrespectful. I was saying, you know, you gotta be careful. If you move up to heavyweight, are you moving up to heavyweight because you're going to be better? Or are you moving up to heavyweight because you don't want to cut weight? Because you don't want to run. You don't want to watch your food. You know what I'm saying? Because we can all let ourselves go. And I was saying, because when you're forced to make 205, you know, yeah, of course you get out of bed. You got to go for runs. You got to watch your diet. You got to make sure you're not having too many carbs, fats, puddings, desserts, beers, you know, things like that, you know. So it forces you to be disciplined. And it forces you almost to get in shape. Because if you don't make weight, of course, it's unprofessional. You could get cut. And of course, you got to give your opponent 20 or 30%. And people don't want that. We're fighting for the money. We don't want to give it away. So as I said, it forces you almost to be disciplined and, you know, to get in shape. At heavyweight, you don't necessarily have that same thing. So I was like, okay, I wonder where he's at. But he looked good. Valente was taking his time. The leg kicks were paying dividends. The leg kicks were really heavy. And then, of course, he catches him in the third round, drops him when Maurice tried to do a Superman punch. He caught him. I think it was a left hook or a right hook, put him down. Some big shots. And I thought he was going to finish the fight. And I'm like, wow, okay, here we go. That's kind of a turnaround because Maurice was looking really good. He was using his range well. But then he punched himself out, essentially.
Yeah. He looked too tired. He had no energy left. Just went fucking apeshit. And really, it looked like he was going to stop him. And you actually said it during the commentary. It was like it didn't seem like he tapped from being caught in a submission. It seemed like he just was not able to breathe anymore. He was so tired and he was like, fuck this. I just got to get out of there.
Yeah, exactly. But Maurice Greene has got an 80-inch reach, so he's got very long arms, and he was able to – it was like a head and arm from underneath. But I don't think in that situation that the submission was particularly tight. I don't know – you know, I mean, Big John McCarthy and Josh Thompson, you know, they're talking a little trash, saying, oh, it is a submission. Those guys, you got to watch your fucking backs, fellas. But we'll leave that there. But we're leaving it. We're not saying anything. We're not lowering ourselves. We'll just talk about it when we're drunk on bourbon at 4 a.m.
Oh, yeah. And we'll see you guys in Vegas one day. Don't you worry.
We'll catch up, Big John. Little Josh. Little Josh Thompson.
Anyway, Big John's pretty big. I'm going to have some trouble with him.
Fuck that. If we're picking on anybody, it's Josh Thompson, okay? Yeah. Big John, what's up, buddy? Hey, all fun and games. Little Josh Thompson there, you fucking little asshole. No. So he got him in the head and arm from underneath. But I think it was more a case that he was just exhausted. And his face was in the chest of Maurice Greene. So that was cutting off his air supply as it was. Number one, he was absolutely fucking exhausted and he was restricting his airflow a little bit with the choke and he tapped, but it was an exciting fight.
Hey, Mike, real quick, we should talk about one of our incredible sponsors, which is CBDMD. I love CBDMD. If you guys don't know, CBD is the non-psychoactive compound in marijuana or in hemp. It doesn't get you high. It's 100% legal in 50 states. This is when they're talking about medical marijuana, this is the medical benefit that people are talking about, and you don't have to get stoned in order to receive those benefits. CBDMD has a multitude of different types of products, and they have really high quality CBD because you don't want to get it from just anywhere.
Hey, here's the thing, right? Certainly in the UFC, a lot of fighters, they got these CBD deals, okay? They got these CBD companies. But guess what? They're Joe Schmo. They are not the good CBD. There's good CBD. There's bad CBD. There's reputable CBD. There's shady CBD. There's a CBD that, like, is going to rob you and steal you and, like, maybe give you drugs. There's CBD companies out there that are going to give your children, they're going to get them addicted to heroin, but not CBDMD. This is the best quality, and this is the best price per milligram. So ask yourself, do you want a CBD company that's going to get your children addicted to heroin, or do you want a CBD company that's going to help with inflammation, anxiety, insomnia, and a bunch of other elements, and also offers you a 30-day money-back guarantee, I think? Where is it?
Free shipping on all U.S. orders and a 30-day money-back guarantee.
And guess what? Awesome customer service as well. You got any questions about your ailments, things like that, you just call them up. You get reliable customer support with actual knowledgeable humans available to answer all of your questions. And again, best prices per milligram. So there you go. So go to cbdnd.com, check it out. You will not be disappointed. I give you my word on that. I'm a big advocate for CBDMD. I'm very, very proud to be a face of their brand, so to speak. So go to cbdmd.com, check out the website, and make sure you use the code BYM20, and that's going to get you 20% off their entire range. The drops, the bath bombs, the gels, the creams, the freeze. There's a bunch of different items. cbdmd.com, and the code is BYM20. All right, where were we? Then what was next? What was after that? Mike Perry? Was that the next one?
It was Perry versus Gall, which, you know, look, it was not... It was a great performance by Mickey, and it was a great performance by Perry. It just wasn't the outcome that I want. I'm friends with Mickey, obviously, and I'm a fan of Perry, so I'm not shitting on Perry at all. Mickey's striking definitely improved, massively improved. He was beating him to the punch, and I think he actually beat him in the fight metric in terms of how much he was landing. The problem is Perry just fucking lands with reckless abandon. Every time he hits you, it looks like he's trying to take your head off, and he was just definitely doing more damage. But I thought it was overall, I mean, I think Mickey will look back, and it's not where it does suck to lose. I think it was actually a really great performance when you consider the fact that it was a little bit closer than I think people were giving Mickey credit for.
Yeah. Listen, I love Mickey. Yeah, I think he's a great guy. He's a friend as well. We've had him on the show multiple times. He's just an awesome human being, right? You can't not like Mickey Gall. He's just a fucking good dude. And at the same time, I find it impossible to not be a fan of Mike Perry, right? Mm. If you like mixed martial arts, if you like the UFC, you love high-octane sports, come on. Mike Perry's what it's all about. Is he... You know, he's maybe not to everybody's taste, but you can appreciate the passion and the drive and the energy that he brings. And you've got to appreciate the way the guy fights, right? Is it the most technical? Probably not. But is it fun to watch? Is he a brawler? Does he wear his heart on his sleeve? Is he controversial? Is all these things that he's must-watch TV. You know what I mean? And you don't have to agree with everything. You don't have to appreciate everything. But he is must-watch TV. And I think the UFC, you know, I mean, Jesus Christ, keep hold of that guy. He's just fucking awesome. And the reality is he was just too much for Mickey on Saturday night. Right? Mickey did look better. He looked improved. His striking looked better. And I don't mean this, and I'm trying to be nice. He didn't have enough pop on his shots to hurt Mike Perry. So Mike was able to just walk through his punches. You know what I'm saying? Mickey did look good. His striking looked technical. He looked better. But Perry's got a hell of a chin. And he's kind of that meathead mentality where he's like, fuck it, I'll just walk through them. And that's what he was doing. And he was landing more shots. He got some big takedowns. He had some good ground and pound.
Well, that was the part that was a little bit hard. Because I remember I was watching the first round when Perry got the takedown. He like almost took his back and dragged him down. It wasn't like, I don't remember, it was a moment, but I remember being like, all right, good. And then when they got to the ground, I was like, oh shit, it's not like Mickey's like Damian Maia versus Mike Perry where you get to the ground, it's almost like a foregone conclusion that eventually he's going to get there. You realize that Mike Perry has better jiu-jitsu than people were giving him credit for. And Mickey isn't, it's like Mickey has a jiu-jitsu base, but it's not like he's this jiu-jitsu ace where anybody who goes to the ground, Mickey Gall is getting submitted. So it was...
And you got to remember, sorry to cut you off, up until recently, I think it's called Fusion XL. That's where Perry was training. They got Jacare down there. They got Rodolfo Vieira, which is one of the best jiu-jitsu guys on the planet.
You said that,
so he was training with a lot of high-level guys for a long time. You know what I mean? So it's not like he doesn't know what he's doing. Still, it's like me. I was labeled as a striker. I know what I'm fucking doing on the ground. I know how to defend. They're very different. If you're playing jiu-jitsu and trying to initiate a jiu-jitsu match and look for submissions and passing guard and looking for sweeps and all that type of thing, then more opportunities to get submitted present themselves. But if you're just playing defensively, you shut everything down, you're not playing that game, you just want to get back to the feet or just smash them in the face with elbows, there's nowhere near as many submissions available to you. So the jiu-jitsu in that respect, if they're not engaging, won't work. But we're forgetting the big key item here, Lewis. He had an all-star fucking corner team. You know, corner work of Mike Perry was on another level. And I'm having a laugh, Mike, because that's what we do. So don't get offended. But she gave solid advice.
What was some of her advice that you remember?
There was a classic where she said, hit him in the face. Right?
It's good advice.
It's to the point. There's no, not overcomplicating the message, not trying to sound over articulate like some corner men do. It was like, to the point, straight, perfect advice as well. What am I trying to do predominantly in a fight? I'm trying to hit them in the face. She reminded Mike of the message. Hit him in the face.
Who knows what he was going to do without that advice?
He was jabbing at the shin, for crying out loud. Yes. I'm like, no, hit him in the face. Sorry, Mike, we're having fun at your expense, and my apologies.
Here's another quote. You're doing great, baby. You look great, babe.
Yeah. And then she was giving him the ice in the corner, and she said, would you like the ice anywhere else on your body? He said, yeah, on my head. You know, she's like, you know, attentive, caring, sharing. I'm joking, you know, listen.
As you're joking, though, let me ask you a question, though. In more of a serious sense, is there any advantage in just not having a bunch of people in your corner getting in your head and just having somebody there that you're like, hey, I love her, I respect her, she's going to give me some fucking ice, she's going to encourage me. Because you've mentioned having bad corner men in the past, but maybe just sort of not having any other distractions could help certain fighters.
Yeah, look, listen, the reality is you do want a good corner team, right? They can help you. Well, they will help you. A good corner team, of course, they're going to support you. They're going to help you warm up. They're going to get you to do pads, drills, you know, whatever it is you're focusing on for that camp. And then, of course, in the fight, they're going to highlight things. My hair is out of control. They're going to highlight things that they see, you know, so they've got a third eye or multiple sets of eyes on the fight, and they see things that you don't see. Just like when you said in your fight, you know, the overhand right was there, but you weren't recognizing it. Sometimes somebody highlighting that to you makes it sink in, then you go for it. So listen, cornermen are very, very, of course, they're beneficial, you know, but for that fight, he chose her. It paid off and good for him. He hasn't got to pay any cornermen. Afterwards, he was having a little rant about the tax man. You know, and I totally get it. I hate the tax man. Nobody likes paying taxes. I feel you're paying Mike Perry. But maybe, you know, I think he's got some tax issues. I think that's what he alluded to. I don't know much about it, just what he said. You got to pay cornermen. You know, cornermen do want paying. They're not going to fly to another part of the country and give up their time for free. So maybe that was an element, that was an issue. And he said that I am trying to find a team. He's trying to get the right team. And it is weird. We've talked about this before. You've got to find people that you gel with, you know, people that you trust. But you've got to trust these people. If you don't trust them, you feel they're there for the wrong reasons. They're just there to get paid. They're just there to get seen on TV. Then yeah, then he probably did the fucking right thing and it paid off, you know. But going forward, he does need to get a team and he needs to get cornermen. And he recognizes that. But he went out there at the weekend and we had a bit of fun at his expense. But I don't. It's not coming from a nasty place. I'm a big fan of Mike Perry.
Yeah, and good for him. Awesome.
He got a great win.
He did. And look, Mickey, you know, obviously back on the horse. The problem with Mickey, it's like he is just, dude, it's trial by fire. Every fight, his whole career, he's been just learning how to fight and learning how to be a professional mixed martial artist on the biggest stage in the world against the toughest fighters in the world. There's been really not, you know, any easy matchups in the UFC. So, you know, Mickey's in sort of a weird position where it's like.
Listen, I'm sorry to cut you off, but.
No, please.
Mike Perry, I kept doing this on Saturday night. Mickey. I was like, oh. Mike Perry's the real deal. You know, he's not a fake. He's not a pretender. He's not a martial artist. He's a fucking tough guy that would, whatever phase of his life or whatever period he was in, he was always going to be that guy, right? That's who he is. That's in his DNA. He's a guy that loves to fight. He's a guy that won't back down from confrontation. He's a strong, powerful athlete that's dedicated himself to this sport and he's getting better with every single fight. So that was an incredibly tough fight for Mickey Gall. It was. So there's no shame there. You know, I'm sure he was.
And he lost the fight, but he did win one of the rounds. And I think there was the second round he ended up losing because he got dropped, I think it was. But a lot of those rounds were really, really close. So the fact that he did that well against Mike Perry, who, you know, obviously I think Mike Perry with the right camp and the right training and the right focus could go really, really far. He seems to have a lot of the variables to make himself a star. You know what I'm saying?
He's a maniac. He's a maniac. No, he isn't. It's great. No, no, no. He doesn't give a shit. He's himself. It's 100% authentic and genuine. And people recognize that and people like that. And as I say, maybe he's not for everybody's taste, but you can't help but watch him. He's just, I'm telling you.
You have to have villains too, by the way. So if maybe he's not for your taste, but it's like, you know, Game of Thrones wouldn't have existed without Cersei Lannister. So you have to appreciate, even if you're like, oh, I fucking hate Cersei Lannister, I want her to die. I mean, that's an amazing...
terrible analogy. I love Mickey Gorter. So I'm doing it again. I'm fucking on the commentary. I'm fucking the best sport in the world, and I'm fucking up people's names. Mike Perry is awesome. He's not a bad guy to me. He's the fucking hero. He's Jon Snow.
You think he's Jon Snow? No, he's
no,
more...
He's the big fucking... he's a wildling. He's the big wildling with the beard.
He lives beyond the wall.
Mike Perry. Yeah, he's in the wall for sure. Mike Perry was a Game of Thrones character. Well, who would you be?
Who would I be?
Oh, you'd be Varys.
Is the
bold...
Oh, the bald guy without a dick? Thanks. The bald dickless guy? Yeah, that's me. Yes, you piece of shit.
The bald guy without a dick.
You'd be Jaime Lannister because you actually have Jaime Lannister's face.
Oh, God. Hey, I'll be Jaime Lannister. A Lannister always pays his debts. That's funny. The bald guy. I forgot that he didn't have a dick.
Bald dickless guy. Thanks. Okay. All right. My child's right there.
No, Mike Perry would be that big one with the beard, the big wildling. Anyway, listen, Mike Perry is the man. And then afterwards, just everything about him. You know, he's very watchable. You know, he's engaging. You know, you want to watch this guy. You don't know what he's going to say. He's unpredictable. And there's something to that. And it's all genuine. It's not pre-manufactured. It's not contrived. You know, then afterwards, on the microphone, starts having a rant about taxes and stuff like that. And I fucking love it. And everyone that pays too much tax was sitting there going, yes, I feel your fucking pain, Mike.
Did he say something about your commentary? Did I read that somewhere? Harrington chime in. I'm sure you're the guy.
Yeah, no, he said, because even Kevin Ioli, the great Kevin Ioli of Yahoo Sports, let's have a look. Here's what he said. Where is it? Kevin Ioli. He texts me. Kevin Ioli texted me this, and I was trying to think of a way as an egotistical maniac to drop this into the commentary because it basically just gives me a pat on the back, and I'm like, no, I can't do it. He says, get this. When I said to him, don't you feel that a corner can help giving you advice and adjustments? He mentioned you. He said, after the Luke Air fight, I watched a replay and Michael Bisping made a comment about what I should have done. None of my coaches said shit, but this motherfucker at least said something that made sense. You know what I learned? He sent it again. He said, Bisping said, here, I would Gable grip my hands together and pull in his lower back. I was like, look at that. Nobody said that to me. That's what I mean. These coaches aren't doing anything other than taking the best seat in the house. So bit of a pessimistic view there. Maybe his corners didn't give him the best advice or whatever, but going forward, he's going to have cornermen. That's that. Well done, Mike.
Maybe you can be his cornerman. There we go.
I'll train you. Let's go. I'm going to get fucking tattoos on my face, multicolored hair like fucking Sean O'Malley. I'm coming in as Takeshi 6'9".
I want you to be Mike Perry's coach so badly. You and Mike Perry, within a month, would burn a hotel down in Vegas.
It'd be great. Could you imagine? Oh, my God.
Mike and Mike squared.
No, we'd end up fighting each other pretty soon, I reckon.
Pretty quickly.
Yeah. For sure. It'd be awesome at first, then we'd clash, and we'd be like fighting for sure. No, he's awesome. And commiserations, Mickey Gall. You'll be back, buddy. Don't give up. You're doing well. It's the toughest sport in the world, and you're learning on the job, so hold your head up high. All right. Let's get into this main event. This main event. My God. Lewis, what did you think? You watched it. You were a few beers deep, few drinks deep. Yeah. But come on. That is, in my opinion, the fight of the year. But go ahead. What do you make of it?
Yeah, I mean, just incredible. Those guys just kept bringing it. And you're right. This is my problem lately, is when I start drinking, by the time the main event happens, I'm a little bit sloshed. I'm a little bit like in another place. But I just remember, I don't remember anything round by round, just being front to back from the beginning of the fight to the end of the fight, nonstop action. I didn't even remember who won. That's how crazy the fight was and how drunk I had gotten during it. I didn't remember after the next morning I woke up. I was like, God damn it, that fight was crazy. And I saw the Dan Hooker video that he posted on Twitter that you retweeted, which was like his face was all beat up and bruised, but he was like just partying with his buddies in his hotel room. And it was sort of a cool the side of social media that is pretty cool. You get to see something like that. Whereas like when I first started watching this sport, you never got to sort of see that side of it, what it was like right afterwards, right?
Yeah, no, listen, it was an incredible fight. And it is hard to piece together all the action because it was nonstop. And both of those guys, they put on, yeah, in my opinion, the fight of the year. The other one that's close, and it is very, very close discussion, is Zhang Weili and Joanna Jędrzejczyk. Mm. You forget about that one. It's kind of recency biased, you know what I mean? You see that one, it's fresher in your mind. So I'm thinking that was the best. But dude, I mean, number one, round one and two, Dan Hooker, you know, kind of took control. He was using his jab well. He was using those calf kicks well. He was controlling it. And then whenever, both guys just looked incredible. I give round one and two to Hooker, round three and four to Poirier, and round five, it was up in the air. Whoever won round five was going to win the fight. But fuck me, man. Those guys, the amount of shots they took. And I don't know if it's the smaller octagon. I don't know if it's no crowd. I don't know if it was just simply the ferocity of the fight. But I was losing my mind. Sitting there watching that fight, you could hear every blow. I mean, Poirier was backed up against the fence and Hooker was going boom, 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 three shots to the body, bang, 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 four hooks to the face. And Poirier was like just taking them all in and bang, bang, bang. He'd give three fucking elbows, fire right back. It was just non-stop fucking action. I was like, wow, these guys, man. When you see it up close, you got to respect what these people do. And I'm not saying that because I used to be a fighter. To me, that does feel like a lifetime ago. I don't think of myself as a fighter anymore. I don't have that mindset. And I'm sitting there and I'm watching that, what these guys are doing to each other, all in the name of winning the fight, because they're such competitors. They want to win and it means so much to them. And they want to be champions of the world. And they sacrifice themselves in training. They fucking kill themselves in training. They diet, they do everything they can. And then they put it all on the line in the octagon. And those motherfuckers fought their heart out. And they deserve all the money in the world, all the accolades, all the praise, because fuck me, that was a fight for the ages. And we had Evander Holyfield tweeted about it. There was all kinds of celebrities. Obviously, there's not much sport going on right now, but the UFC was showing them on the screen, right? And I forget now who they were, but there was the one that stood out was Evander Holyfield. There was a few other people, but there were a lot of celebrities going, holy shit, are you watching this? What a crazy fight. And yeah, as I said, they deserve all the praise in the world. Just an incredible display.
Yeah, those fights, and you see it happen just once in a while. I don't know what it is. You just get two guys that match up in a certain way and they just lay it all on the line. You know, it's great to watch it as a fan. It's like incredible. And it's just a different mentality that those fighters have. And you sort of see it, like certain fighters come in and they're fighting to, you know, not get hit, and they're fighting it safe and they really want to win. And then you have other guys that it's just sure grit and determination. And it's like, that's what you want to see with every fight. But it's almost like that you can't really sustain a long career of doing that over and over and over again. You figure, how much damage can somebody take like that? Both those guys have to be fucking just demolished afterwards.
Yeah, well, Poirier, he's obsessed with becoming the champion, like most fighters, you know, but he's been there. He was the interim. He wants to be the undisputed champion. And that's still a fire that burns within him. He said he's probably not going to fight now for the rest of the year. He just came back after a lengthy layoff. He had to have hip surgery. His hip was giving him a lot of issues. And here he is, one fight back, boom. He's probably going to be out for the rest of the year, probably another year off, because, you know, wars like that, they take it out of you and you leave a piece of yourself inside the octagon. Like, I think, and I don't mean this, and I'm not being disrespectful at all, but I hope he takes this the right way. But I feel like a good example, the beers, man, the bourbon last night. I can't fucking think. So my apologies. A good example of that is Robert Whittaker, right? Tremendous fighter. He was on a fucking tear, but he had those two crazy wars with Yoel Romero. And I feel the human body, we've only got so many of them in us, you know? And as a fighter, they take your toll. And the more wars you go through, the shorter career you're going to have. Now, we don't know if that's why Adesanya knocked him out. We don't know if it was just a bad night at the office. But fucking wars like that, yeah, you want to avoid them. It's what fans want to see. It's what they pay to see. It's what the fans dream of. But it's not what a fighter should dream of. Because those, as I say, you've only got so much shelf life. You've only got so many wars in you. And the more punches you take, the shorter your career is going to be. That's why Floyd Mayweather, 15-0 now. That's why he's had such a long career, because he was just a master of defense. He would never get caught. He never allowed himself to get into the brawls, and he would always fight smart. And then ultimately, that's what you want to do.
And the problem is with fighting safe and fighting smart, I think it takes you a lot longer to develop that fan base. It's a weird thing. It's like a catch 22, because you want to be exciting. You want to fucking, to make the big bucks quick and have everybody, be like, oh my God, this is the next guy. But you also want to be the champion. You want to be undefeated, so how much you got to put on a scale. It's like, how much is being undefeated worth and going after that title and being that guy worth it versus coming in and being a guy who just says, fuck it, throws caution to the wind and becoming a star that way. So it's like Mike Perry, that style, right? A George St. Pierre, which is just a very different path. He started taking damage, a lot of damage toward the end of his career.
I love the way you bring him up, and he quite literally dropped me and choked me out unconscious in his last fight. Thanks, Lewis. Appreciate that. No. Terrible example. Edit that bit out. No.
Your rib, bro.
My ribs, they were bad.
They were bad.
I was filming for my documentary yesterday. They came to just get some final bits. You were here. And we had to do some voiceover stuff, right? And I just talk about the GSP thing, and they had a line for me to say, because obviously they got to, all the filming's done, and I'm just doing voiceover stuff, so we've only got a limited amount of seconds to make the point. And I kept trying to get in there. So what it was my ribs, and they're like, no, I haven't got time for that, Mike. And I'm like, but it's essential that the viewer knows. He's like, Mike, we literally have a 5-second window. You have to say, I lost my belt to George St. Pierre, and I went home. It's like, that's all you got to say. I'm like, so I damaged my ribs, and because of that, I'm like, Mike, we haven't got time. I'm like, we have to get it in there. And they're like, we can't, baby boy. Oh dear. Where was I? Oh no, I was gonna say Hooker and Poirier. Unfortunately for them, that's kind of the way they had to fight, because for Hooker, he's 6 foot tall, 6 foot one, I think, as a lightweight. So he's very tall. He's got a long reach. And if Poirier is going to stay on the outside and play that game, he's going to lose the fight. So the only way Poirier can win the fight, he's got to get in the pocket. So he's got to use head movement. He's got to slip the jabs and try and get on the inside. And then from there, you've got to make getting on the inside worth it. You've got to land some shots. You've got to throw long combinations, And when he does that, Hooker was very good in the pocket as well. So the two of them are standing there fucking trading shots like crazy. Body shots, elbows, knees, the whole fucking kit and caboodle. Is that the expression? The whole kit and caboodle is what they were throwing out there, in the pocket, kitting and caboodling like crazy, throwing the kitchen sink. And it was just tremendous to watch.
Yeah, it was great. It really is great. And, good for Poirier. Poirier is like, I don't know what it is. Like, he's just like, just under the radar. Like, I feel like people don't talk about him like he's pound for pound, but he's like one of the best in the world. He never has a boring fight. He usually wins the fights that he's supposed to win.
Look at his resume recently. He beat Eddie Alvarez, beat Anthony Pettis, beat Justin Gaethje.
Yeah, he has a Gaethje win. That's right. Yeah.
Beat Hooker at the weekend, lost to Khabib. No big deal.
Oh, yeah. Then. He wants Gaethje to beat Khabib so bad, because a perfect setup. Oh, my God.
Listen, Gaethje's incredible, but he beat the fuck out of Gaethje. Yeah. He did, who knows? If they fought again, it might not go down that way.
Yeah, Gaethje seems to be more disciplined. Like, Gaethje was fighting that reckless, abandoned, crazy style, which he's known for. But in that, who Gaethje just beat?
Ferguson.
Ferguson, yeah. Way more disciplined. I would love to see that fight again. Yeah, I would love to see that fight again. And to be honest with you, when is Gaethje fighting Khabib?
Later this, not too long. I mean, the UFC right now, they've got a fucking stack of main events. Fight Island, I'll be there, happy to say. They've got 3 title fights on. Right, then after that, then I think it's Stipe versus DC3. Then the main event after that, and the next pay-per-view is Gaethje versus Khabib. Ooh. And then, so it's just back-to-back.
That fucking is fucking blockbuster, nuts.
Blockbuster pay-per-views coming up, Yeah. It's a good time to be a UFC fan. And by the way, Dustin Poirier, just also one of the best human beings you'll ever meet. I mean, he has this foundation, and it's not a Mickey Mouse foundation. He's actually trying to do good. It's called the Good Fight Foundation, doing tremendous things. We were having a laugh at his expense about the Brothers Burger on the last show.
Oh, did anybody go there and get the free food?
Yeah, he was talked about on the UFC. They're saying, oh, yeah, get yourself down to Brothers Burger. The tab's on Dustin Poirier. And I'm like, oh, God, me and Lewis did nothing but take the piss out of that. I even said to Poirier as well, when he came in for the fight, to meet him. I said, oh, I said, how big do you think that tab's going to be at Broaders Burger? And he started laughing. I said, hey, we were having a bit of fun on the podcast, just fun and games, you know, didn't mean anything bad.
He's Harrington, did any fans send us pictures at Broaders Burger saying that they went because of us?
I didn't see any personally, but I don't know if Brian checked the email.
It's okay. It's not essential info right now. But yeah, just a good dude. He's just a great guy. Does a lot of charity work and things like that. And it's awesome. I mean, he, for example, there was a feature on the UFC at the weekend about something he was involved with, some charity effort. And there was some kid and it broke my heart. And Poirier, John Anik had to interview him for the piece, and Poirier broke down in tears as well. And when I watched it, I was doing my best. I was really fighting back the tears. Some kid at 6 years old, something like that, just out of the blue, developed this condition. And soon he couldn't, you know, he was in a wheelchair. And it just deteriorated really badly. And of course, eventually he sadly passed away. But his dying wish, his wish was for a fucking park for disabled kids. I'm fucking going to cry now talking about it. I didn't want to see when it came on, because we watched it one time because the producers were like, you've got to see this so you have context. But then when it came on the air, I took my headphones out and I couldn't watch it again because it's so upsetting. And this kid, rather than wishing to go to Disneyland or meet his favorite movie star or whatever it was, his dying wish was a fucking park for disabled kids to be able to use, you know. So fucking, I'm crying now. It's so fucking sad, you know. And Dustin made that happen. They went out there, the Good Fight Foundation, they create this beautiful park for young disabled children. I mean, just fucking what a beautiful thing, man. And it made me feel like an asshole. Here's me over my platform, never did anything like that, you know. And I wish I could, but there's Dustin. You're making me fucking look bad and you're making me cry, you prick.
You're a real piece of shit, Mike. I got to be honest with you.
Real loser.
What have you ever done for anybody but you and the other Bispings?
Pat myself on the back constantly. Show off on Instagram.
Look at his fucking trophy and championship belt in the back. Oh, what a scumbag. Dustin Poirier is out there building parks for disabled children. Think about where you're at in your life and where Dustin Poirier is at. You should shame.
Shaming myself.
You should be ashamed. What have you done for Clithero? What have you done for anybody?
I think about it sometimes. I think, you know what? I want to build a martial arts center for kids to give them some kind of focus, because that's what I had when I was a kid, and it helped me.
But then you buy a car.
But then I remember that I'm in California and it's a long way. And I never go back. And we're on quarantine. I couldn't travel there if I wanted to.
It's a whole to-do. It's a lot of work.
I got things to do. I got podcasts. I'm going to take my son down to the hospital. I'm going to go Big Bear.
Big Boy
Island.
I would love to donate to charity, but I have to bring my entire family on a glamping vacation.
It's just so
expensive. It's a lot.
It's so expensive. No, I am going to do something now. On that note, I got to go. I got to take Luke, Callum down to the hospital. We'll be back. We apologize for the shorter show. And that's it. We'll be back real soon. Enjoy yourselves. Look after yourselves. And we'll be back in a few days.